Hello, everybody. I am John Allen. This is Last Week in the Church, the show where we sort through the flotsam and jetsam of the last week on the Vatican beat. Now, if you tune in regularly, you know that normally what I do is tick off four or five different news stories and spend a few minutes on each. Today, however, we're going to shake things up. To quote Monty Python, now for something completely different. What we're going to do today is focus exclusively on one story, but try to open the hood and really figure out what is going on. That story is new cardinals. This past Sunday, Pope Francis announced a consistory. That's the event in which popes create new cardinals for September 30th. He gave 21 names of new princes of the church, including 18 under the age of 80 and thus eligible to vote for the next pope. We're going to look at this story through five different lenses. To begin with, we are going to look at how this consistory shows us a pope in a hurry. Secondly, we're going to look at what it tells us, and maybe just as importantly, maybe even more importantly, what it doesn't tell us about what to expect from the next consistory. Third, we'll identify the new papabili, that is, candidates to be pope in this crop of new princes of the church. Fourth, we'll consider what is to be learned from those who weren't invited to the party. And then finally, we will look at one choice in particular, which has something very interesting to say about this pope's concept of balance. All that and more is waiting for you in this week's episode of Last Week in the Church. So please, for the love of God, in the name of all the angels and saints, don't go anywhere, because I will be right back. All right. Well, happy Tuesday to you. Happy mid-July, basically, to all of you out there. I don't know how it is where you are. Here in Rome, the heat is sweltering and oppressive. And you know what? I've lived in Italy for my entire adult life. I consider myself basically Italian by adoption, if not by blood. Despite all of that, screw the Italians. God bless air conditioning. All I have to say. All right. So this week, our focus is on the Pope's big announcement, his July surprise, so to speak, his announcement during his noontime Angelus address this past Sunday, that on September 30th, notably, that is, the eve of the first of his two synods of bishops on synodality, he is going to create 21 new cardinals, including 18 under the age of 80, who are therefore eligible to elect the next pope. Lot to say about all of this, but let's begin with what I would consider to be the sort of main point, I guess, about this consistory. Now, if I were going to go all literary on you, I would say this is, in a way, the Andrew Marvell consistory. Sure, you all remember, we all studied in our English lit classes, right? That famous Andrew Marvell poem to his coy mistress with the famous line, "At my back, I always hear time's winged chariot hurrying near." Well, this consistory reflects a pope who hears time's winged chariot hurrying near. That is, a pope in a hurry, in a rush, wants to get things done now. How do we know that? Well, let's begin with the fact that one of the new princes of the church on his list is Argentine Archbishop Victor Manuel Fernandez, named to be the new prefect of the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith only on July 1st, and of course then on July 8th, is named a new cardinal. It's as if, having waited 10 years to bring his key theological advisor in from the cold and giving him a formal Vatican job, Pope Francis didn't even want to wait another 10 days to give him the red hat. Or consider the fact that the pope has given a red hat to an auxiliary bishop in Lisbon, Portugal, creating the odd scenario that Lisbon now has two cardinals, while other European dioceses, Paris, Prague, Berlin, don't have even one. And this, of course, ahead of the Pope's August 2nd to the 6th trip to Lisbon for World Youth Day. Consider the fact that he has elevated a coadjutor archbishop in Tanzania as a cardinal before that guy actually took over the top job, creating the anomalous situation that the coadjutor now technically outranks the archbishop he is supposed to serve. And, you know, we could go on. I mean, for instance, you know, he named the current apostolic nuncio in the United States as a cardinal, French Archbishop Christophe Pierre, even though, by tradition, nuncios, that is, papal ambassadors, don't get the red hat until they complete their service as a nuncio and come back to Rome and get some other Vatican gig. Or the current Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Pier Battista Pizzaballa, has been named a cardinal. First time the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem has been made a cardinal. Traditionally, the idea was you wouldn't do that out of respect to the other Eastern patriarchs. You don't want to be seen as lifting the Latin guy over the Eastern Rite, Eastern Church patriarchs in the city of Jerusalem, and on and on. In other words, Pope Francis has, now look, he's always been a maverick, right? So the fact that he is breaking with tradition in itself is probably not all that surprising. The fact he is doing it so comprehensively in this consistory, I think what it suggests is that this is a pope, of course, who has been hospitalized twice already in 2023, who continues to suffer chronic knee pain, who has pain in his back and his legs related to sciatica, who had half of his colon removed a couple of years ago, who, of course, is operating with part of one lung removed as a young man. All of that collectively has suggested to him that while he certainly, I think, hopes to be around for some time to come, he would like to see his two synods of bishops on synodality, one this October, one next October, to conclusion. He would like to be there for the great jubilee of 2025. He currently is working on plans to summon a synod of bishops on the Mediterranean. While all of that is on his wish list, I think he recognizes that his time, nevertheless, could be limited, wants to make sure that his legacy is nailed down and the people who are going to carry it forward on his behalf are in the right positions to do so. And that's what we have in this consistory. All right. Secondly, what does this consistory tell us about what to expect out of the next conclave? Because, of course, let's remember, probably the most important function of a cardinal is to elect a pope, right? So the pope is putting new members of the electoral college into the field. Now, the tempting conclusion is, a colleague of ours did the math, as of this consistory, 72% of the cardinals who will elect the next pope will have been named by Pope Francis. That, of course, is almost three quarters. It is well above the two-thirds, the 66% threshold, you actually need to elect a pope. So the tempting conclusion is to say, well, he stacked the deck. This guarantees that the next pope is going to be somebody much like Pope Francis. Well, if I can channel my inner Lee Corso, I don't know how many of you get that reference, but if you were a college football fan in the United States, you will know the program College Game Day on ESPN. Lee Corso is the famous panelist who, whenever somebody makes a pick with which he disagrees, always says, not so fast. Okay, so here's my not so fast. 2 points. First, I would remind you that in 2013, a group of cardinals entirely named by Popes John Paul II and Benedict XVI elected a very different kind of pontiff in Pope Francis. So that ought to induce a note of caution. But secondly, here's the thing. Because of Pope Francis's penchant for naming cardinals from the peripheries, that is, from non-traditional places, we have an electoral college this time composed to a very great degree of complete unknowns. That is, cardinals that we really don't know that well. We don't know what their hopes and dreams are. We don't know what they might be looking for. I mean, in this consistory, you've got new cardinals from South Sudan, from Tanzania, from Malaysia, from Hong Kong. Do you feel confident about what those prelates are going to be looking for in a new pope? I don't. Let me just tell you a very quick story. So recently, my wife, Elise Ann Allen, who was, of course, Crux's superstar, A-list Vatican correspondent, had the opportunity to sit down with another one of these cardinals from the peripheries who was named in a previous consistory, happened to be in Rome on some bit of business. And in the course of conversation, the nomination of Archbishop Fernandez as the new doctrinal czar of the Vatican came up. And this cardinal seemed a little bit, frankly, bewildered, and one might almost say a little bit troubled, about where all this might lead. Now, that's hardly conclusive, but I think what it suggests is that confident predictions about what a group of cardinals, who are basically a lot of them X factors, right? We don't really know what they're thinking. We don't know what's in their minds and in their hearts. I would say the truth of it is, what we don't know about this next conclave probably is much more significant and much more consequential than what we do. All right, third. Now, here's the thing. This is a kind of flippant comparison and apologies. But nevertheless, a consistory, when a pope creates new cardinals, it is a bit like the Iowa caucuses in American politics. That is, it is a chance for new contenders for the top job to introduce themselves to, you know, to the world, right? Now, it is very different in that in American politics, people actually announce that they're running for president, right? Sometimes they do it very artfully. Sometimes, like Governor DeSantis, they try to do it on Twitter and it turns out to be a complete disaster. But in any event, they kind of flag themselves as candidates. Now, papabili, that is, contenders to be the next pope, don't do that. In fact, if you were to ask them prior to the fact, do you consider yourself a contender to be the next pope? Most of them, until they're blue in the face, would scream at you. No, no way, no chance, no how, not me, no. And some of them would actually even mean it. But nevertheless, the fact is that when you have most of the cardinals of the Catholic Church in one place at one time, particularly for a papacy that is probably closer to the end than the beginning, it is inevitable that we will ask ourselves the question, in this new lineup, are there potential popes? Well, look, I'm going to suggest that the answer to that question is yes. In fact, I think this consistory is actually unusually chock full potential papal contenders. Let me just quickly tick off four, and I'll give you the argument of each for each one. We begin with Archbishop Victor Emmanuel Fernandez, the new doctrinal czar in the Vatican, who has been the Pope's most important theological advisor from the very beginning. Much like in 2005, the cardinals, after John Paul II, decided to elect his doctrinal right arm, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, as Pope Benedict XVI, this time cardinals who want continuity with Pope Francis, and maybe in particular, want to see the doctrinal element of his legacy nailed down, you know, might see Fernandez as the logical heir. And so I think it is basically undeniable that Fernandez becomes a key point of reference in this group of cardinals, and certainly somebody who will get a look, you know, regardless of what happens. All right. Secondly, there is Italian cardinal designate, currently Archbishop Claudio Guggerotti, who is the prefect currently of the Vatican's Dicastery for Eastern Churches. Now, Guggerotti is a longtime expert on what you might call the churches of the East, right? Here's the thing. The next pope is going to inherit, he's either going to inherit an actual live war between Russia and Ukraine, or if the war has been resolved, he will inherit the aftermath of that conflict. But in any event, relationships between the Eastern Bloc and the West, between Russia and NATO, between the churches of the West and the churches of the East are going to be a towering item on the next pope's to-do list. Among the current crop of cardinals, you can make an argument, nobody knows that world better than Cardinal Designate Claudio Guggerotti. In addition, he's Italian. There would kind of be a built-in bias among sub-cardinals with the idea that, well, because he's Italian, he would understand the Vatican, he would know where the bodies are buried, he would know how to move the levers of power. You know, all of that might work in his favor. All right, third up on the list of potential popes in this crop of new cardinals, I will give you French Archbishop Christophe Pierre, who is currently the Apostolic Nuncio. That means the Pope's ambassador in the United States. Now, the argument for Pierre basically would boil down to, you would be getting the substance of Pope Francis. I mean, there is no question that Pierre is a Pope Francis guy. I mean, look at the bishops in the United States who have been elevated on his watch. We're talking about Cardinal Blaise Supich in Chicago, Cardinal Joe Tobin in Newark, Cardinal Wilton Gregory in Washington, Cardinal Robert McElroy in San Diego, all of whom would be seen as kind of center-left Pope Francis guys. However, the thing about Pierre is that he is, by training and temperament, a diplomat. I defy you. You know, go on Google and, you know, type in Archbishop Christophe Pierre and look for explosive or controversial things he's actually said. I don't mean things that have been said about him, but I mean things he actually said. You will be searching in vain. He is in terms of his public profile, you know, he is by nature a very cautious and careful personality. So if the diagnosis in the next conclave is, we want to continue the substance of the Francis papacy, but we don't necessarily want the, you know, Mr. Toad's wild ride, right? We don't want to get out of bed every morning worrying about the next bombshell the Pope might have dropped in an interview or a casual comment to somebody. In other words, we want somebody with the same vision, but who's maybe a little bit more personally disciplined, all right, then Cardinal Designate Christophe Pierre might well fit the bill. Plus, he's 75, which means that if you were to elect him Pope, you know, it would be a prescription for a Pope that wouldn't go on, for a papacy that would not go on too terribly long. I remind you, the last two popes, Benedict XVI and Francis, were elected at the ages of 78 and 76, respectively. So, Cardinal-designate Pierre would be right in that wheelhouse. All right. Fourth, in terms of potential popes, I will give you Cardinal-designate Patriarch Pierre Battista Pizzaballa, the current Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem. Now, here's the thing. First of all, he's Italian, so the same things I said about Guggerotti in terms of the presumption that he would know how to make the Vatican work and bend it to his will would also apply to him. But here's the thing. Here's the other argument. What Pizzaballa gets tremendous credit for, since he was named as the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, is somebody who has navigated the Israeli-Palestinian conflict with great art and great deftness. He is certainly seen as sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, the plight of the underdog, but he also has deep ties of friendship and also intellectual interest in Israel and in the Jewish world. I mean, basically speaking, he would be seen as somebody who was about as balanced as you possibly can be in a situation that basically resists anything resembling balance. Now, suppose your diagnosis is that the post-Francis Catholic Church is also a deeply divided, polarized kind of house divided against itself. And you're looking for somebody who you think might be able to straddle that divide, who might be able to heal some of those wounds. I mean, maybe the logic would be, look, if that guy could handle the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, then handling the internal lacerations in the Catholic Church might well be a walk in the park. Right? So in other words, you can see a logic that would lead to each of these four figures. And by the way, they may not be the only potential papal candidates in this crop. I mean, you could also probably make an argument for American Cardinal-designate Robert Prevost, who runs the Pope's dicastery for bishops. I mean, he kind of has the profile of Cardinal Mark Ouellette, right? He is a North American called upon to run the Pope's office for bishops who has deep experience of Latin America. In Prevost's case, he was a missionary and then a bishop in Peru for much of his career. So he's a relative neophyte on the global scene, but you could probably make an argument for him. There's also an argument probably for the cardinal designate in Bogota, Colombia, who has been a key figure in that country's peace process. My point is that if you start to go fishing in this crop of new Cardinals, you can see a number of plausible contenders to be the next Pope, which, of course, makes this all the more interesting. All right, fourth, what do we learn from those, what you might call the disinvited, the leftovers, right? You know, those guys who didn't get a seat at the table. Well, you know, let's begin with the obvious point that, you know, because Pope Francis has this predilection for giving red hats to peripheries and not to established centers of power, there are a number of figures who are notable for having been left off the list. For instance, Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles, former president of the U.S. Bishops' Conference, is probably now the most famous non-cardinal in the Catholic Church. I mean, L.A. is a place that's one of the largest Catholic archdioceses in the world. It has a Catholic population north of 4 million. It is a place where normally you would expect a cardinal to be in charge. He's been waiting 12 years for his red hat, and it still has not come. Or consider Archbishop Mario Delpini of Milan. I mean, Milan, for God's sake. You know, of all the traditional red hat sees in the Catholic world, the idea that Milan would not be led by a cardinal is kind of jaw-dropping from a historical point of view, and yet, once again, Delpini was not invited to the party. In fact, you look around in Italy today, Milan, Venice, and Turin are all now not led by cardinals, places that traditionally you would expect to find cardinals. Look around Europe, Paris, Berlin, Prague. None of these places, which are accustomed to having cardinals, none of them currently have them. Now, of course, the argument in favor of this policy of Pope Francis is that it's about damn time, right? I mean, you know, run the numbers. In the 21st century, more than two-thirds of the 1.3 billion Roman Catholics in the world live outside the West. And by mid-century, that share will be three-quarters. And so you could make an argument that the fact that places such as, you know, Toronto and Los Angeles and Paris and Berlin and Prague don't have cardinals, but you know, Tanzania, Malaysia, Hong Kong, and so forth, they now do, you could say that is a long overdue nod to demographic and historical justice, right? Now, the other side of that argument is, well, but, you know, when you name a guy to a position where there is a clear expectation that he should become a cardinal, and by the way, it's not that Pope Francis uniformly refuses to create cardinals in positions that typically have them. I mean, for instance, in the Vatican, you would expect the head of the the dicastery for bishops and the dicastery for the doctrine of the faith to be cardinals, and indeed, both of them now are. Okay, so there are certain circumstances where Pope Francis will hold to form. So when he names somebody to one of these positions and then repeatedly leaves him off the guest list, you could make an argument that that undercuts his authority, it hobbles him, and do you really want handicapped, hobbled leaders in some of the most important and consequential Catholic archdioceses around the world? And, you know, and that's a debate to go on. Now, you know, the other interesting omission from this list is that there was a lot of speculation that the next time Pope Francis held a consistory, that he would name someone from Ukraine. Maybe Major Archbishop Sviatoslav Shevchuk, the head of the Greek Catholic Church in Ukraine. If not him, maybe the papal nuncio in Ukraine, that is the papal ambassador in that country, that in some way he would find a way to signal his concern and his solidarity with the people of Ukraine. And of course, he hasn't done that. And now, again, there are sort of two ways of construing that. Well, I shouldn't be reductive. There are at least two ways of construing that. The argument in its favor would be that from the very beginning of this conflict, the Pope has tried to walk a very fine line, a non-aligned line. That is, he's tried to remain above the fray, equally open to both sides in the conflict, that is, Russia and its allies and Ukraine and its allies. And had he named a cardinal in Ukraine, without naming a cardinal who was perceived as sort of friendly to the Russians or with some ties to Russia, that might have been seen as a kind of partisan statement that would upset the very delicate diplomatic equilibrium that the Vatican has been trying to strike. Now, the other way of looking at it is that this is a failure of nerve, right? That, frankly, you could make a really good case that of all the prelates in the Catholic world, Shevchuk maybe really deserves a red hat. First of all, his predecessor, Lubomir Husar, was named a cardinal, so there's precedent for it. Secondly, he leads a church that is being battered and is beleaguered on all sides, that has been in the front lines of delivering humanitarian and charitable assistance to the victims of the war. And, by the way, you could also make the argument that Shevchuk has been doing everything he possibly can to carry water for Pope Francis in Ukrainian public opinion, despite the fact that many Ukrainians are really angry and hurt and feeling betrayed by what they perceive as the Pope's failure to clearly side with them against what they perceive to be an unjust and unprovoked aggression from Russia. Shevchuk has been trying to straddle that divide. And, you know, you could make the case that, you know, for the love of God, I mean, then, you know, the guy deserves some kind of, you know, chops, deserves some kind of cred from the Pope, but he didn't get it. And, you know, that in itself will also be something that no doubt will be scrutinized and analyzed as the fallout from this consistory continues to unfold. All right, finally, I want to note a very interesting pick on the Pope's list of new cardinals that I think says something really interesting about Pope Francis and the concept of balance or dialogue, or, you know, to use the word that has become a buzzword in his papacy, synodality, right? The idea of trying to listen to all voices. So the Pope named three honorary cardinals, that is, prelates who are already over the age of 80 and therefore ineligible to take part in the next conclave, the next papal election. One of them was a guy I have known, you know, it feels like forever, Italian Archbishop Agostino Marchetto. Marchetto, once upon a time, was the secretary of what was then the Pontifical Council for Migrants and Refugees. Of course, it has subsequently been subsumed into the new mega dicastery for integral human development. But what Marchetto was actually much better known for in Italy is a series of historical studies that he has produced of the Second Vatican Council. And I mean, to just sum this up, he would be seen as a conservative analyst of the Second Vatican Council, arguing for a hermeneutic of continuity, that is, that Vatican II did not intend to make a dramatic break with the church that came before, but rather an organic development. So it's interesting, isn't it, that Pope Francis, who is popularly seen as a progressive, nevertheless has chosen to bestow this honor on a guy who is seen as a conservative. And you could argue that that is an important papal gesture in the direction of balance. Now, on the other hand, you could also say, well, yeah, but he waited until Marchetto was already over 80, so he is safely away from having any role in the selection of the next pope. And so you could say, well, okay, what this boils down to is inclusion but not influence. That is, the pope was willing to listen but not necessarily be guided by the perspectives of figures such as Marchetto. Again, something that you could parse a variety of different ways, but nevertheless, an interesting element of this consistory. You can find full coverage, by the way, of the new consistory and all other breaking Vatican news items on the Crux site, that is cruxnow.com. We are also continuing to raise money on behalf of our managing editor, Charles Collins, who has been fighting for his life in the wake of a serious illness for 2 months now. You can find links to that fundraising campaign on the Crux site. If you can contribute in any way, large or small, we would be eternally grateful. That is our show for this week. We will be back here next week, same bat time, same bat channel, In the meantime, stay safe, stay healthy, have a fantastic and blessed week, and we will talk to you again very soon.